was sitting there last night, and I was using my massage gun on my shoulders, and I got over to the back of my head, and it was hitting the back of my head over and over, and I noticed that my head was going forward and down, and then I moved the massage gun over to my jaw, and all of the sudden my head started going back and to the left when I started doing it on the front of my head. Anyways, welcome to the Back Ass Words podcast. Oh, we are the Back Ass Words boys. I'm Kyle. I use he, they pronouns. And joining me from our beautiful Colorado studio is Arden.
And I am in absolute shock. This is the best intro to the podcast ever, and I use he, him pronouns. Wow. Not ready for that. Wow. Wow.
Tonight, guys, gals, and NB pals, I am going to be continuing and wrapping up, finally, after now 9 weeks, wrapping up the conspiracy side of our JFK series with part 9 of JFK's assassination.
Oh, okay. I feel like I'm back into the show mode now after being absolutely floored. I am so excited. We are getting to the end of this series, and Kyle has done such a fantastic job so far. I'm so excited to learn about more conspiracy, and honestly, it's been an absolute ride. I'm really excited to see where the rest of the series is going.
Yeah, a ride it has been, and we are nearing the finish line. But of course, guys, before we get too deep into it, we're going to list our sources for this week, and as always, the first stop on our research train was our good friend Wikipedia.
Because we stan Wikipedia on this motherfucking podcast.
Find yourself in the situation to do so. Go ahead and throw them a few bucks. I am sure that they could use it.
Probably buys the staff some like Stanley cups or something. I don't know. Something
like that. To put their Diet Cokes in.
Something like that.
I used their page on John F. Kennedy assassination conspiracy theories. I also used their page on Lee Harvey Oswald as well. I also used an article from CIA.org titled "The Lie That Linked CIA to the Kennedy Assassination."
Whoa, Kyle!
I also used an article from Esquire.com from archive.org titled "Lee Harvey Oswald's CIA Connection Revealed with Inquiry into the Agent's Unreleased Files."
I mean, just when you thought it couldn't get any better, you know, just when you thought it can't get any more crazy, there's a literal fucking article from the CIA saying how all of this is a lie. I can't be any more ready to get into tonight's episode.
As always, guys, we are not scholars, and we are probably going to get some things wrong, especially in this last episode here, depending on who you ask.
Again, important to distinguish between what you know and what you think you know, just as a reminder.
We are also not linguists, and we are probably going to say some things wrong.
Absolutely.
Now, hold on to your asses and the backs of your heads, because things are about to get backwards.
Oh, Kyle. Oh, my God. I'm so excited. It's JFK Part 9. There's an article from the fucking CIA in this outline. I cannot wait. Take me into it, Kyle.
The assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy is a lot like 9/11 in a lot of ways. But one of the major similarities between the two events is that when asked, anyone who was alive and conscious at the time could tell you where they were and what they were doing. Everyone except George H.W. Bush. You think I'm done introducing people just because it's part 9? Get the fuck out of here. Get out of my class.
It's not so much the fact that you're introducing someone new. It's whom you've introduced, my friend. Oh, my actual God. Who would have thought? I've been
keeping this one in my pocket for so long, and I'm so...
For 9 episodes. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Some critics of the official findings theorize that George H.W. Bush was involved in the assassination as a CIA operative in Dealey Plaza.
What?
In the book, Plausible Denial, Was the CIA Involved in the Assassination of JFK? American attorney Mark Lane suggests that Bush worked out of a Houston office as a CIA agent at the time of the assassination. In the book, Family of Secrets, Russ Baker contends that Bush became an intelligence agent in his teenage years and was later at the center of the plot to assassinate Kennedy, and it included his father, Prescott Bush, Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson, CIA Director Alan Dulles, Cuban and Russian exiles and immigrants, and various Texas oil men. According to Baker, Bush was in Dallas on the night before and the morning of the assassination.
I'm extremely floored right now for a lot of different reasons, but I am shocked at how severe an accusation this is. This is a fucking hefty thing to put on my man's name, dude. Oh my God.
On November 29th, 1963, exactly 1 week after the assassination, an employee of the FBI wrote in a memo that Mr. George Bush of the Central Intelligence Agency was given a briefing on the reaction to the assassination by Cuban exiles living in Miami. Joseph McBride speculated that the George Bush cited in the memo was the future United States President George H.W. Bush, who was appointed head of the CIA by President Gerald Ford in 76, 13 years after the assassination. During Bush's presidential campaign in 1988, the memo resurfaced, prompting the CIA to claim that the memo was referencing an employee named George William Bush. However, George William Bush, who was a real person and a real operative of the CIA, disputed the suggestion, declaring under oath, quote,
"I am not the George Bush of the Central Intelligence Agency referred to in the memorandum."
In 1998, the AARB instructed the CIA to review its personnel files of former President Bush and to provide a definitive statement as to whether he was the person referred to in the memo. And of course, this is coming directly from the CIA, so take it with several grains of salt. But the CIA responded that it had no record of any association with former President Bush during the 1963 time period. On the website JFK Facts, author Jefferson Morley writes that any communication by Bush with the FBI or CIA in November of 1963 does not necessarily demonstrate culpability in the assassination, and that it is, quote, unclear whether Bush had any affiliation with the CIA prior to his appointment to the head of the agency in 1976.
Okay. So we know that a Mr. George Bush of the CIA exists, right? And right. We also know that there was a George William Bush in the CIA.
Correct.
And
he swore under oath that he was not the George Bush being referenced in this memo. How many George Bushes do you think were working for the CIA in 1963?
Well, and he literally became like the head dog at the FBI 13 years
later.
At the CIA?
Yes.
Wait.
Yeah, he was head of the CIA.
He was head of the CIA?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, dude, it was him. He was totally there. Like, yes. He had to have been. Yeah, he worked there in 1963. Like, absolutely.
And he claims that he has no idea where he was on November 22nd, 1963.
But, like, then how does that connect him to JFK's assassination, though? Like, maybe I'm missing that part. He was
a CIA agent in Dallas, Texas, the day that the president was assassinated.
Well, yeah, I guess then we're running with the theory that the CIA killed JFK. And so, like, if George Bush was
nine, yes, we are running with that theory.
Well, it's no. I don't mean it like that. I'm just saying that that's the theory that this one is also operating under, right?
Correct, yes.
So if that's the case and George Bush works for the CIA in 1963, there's kind of no way he's not there.
No.
Especially because Bush was in Dallas the night before and the morning of the assassination.
Yeah.
Someone fucking named George Bush was there the night before and the day of.
Yeah.
That's fucking crazy. I believe that like 95%.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like 95% convinced that that's a real thing.
Now, Arden, I know I just blew your mind, and this bit seemed to blow your mind a bit last week, so we're going to talk about it a little bit more in depth, I promised you. I don't think it's the one you wanted. I couldn't find any more information on that. I really tried.
Which one?
The Daltex building.
It's fine.
I tried. There was not much there.
That melted my brain.
I mean, I think there's something there, but there's no info there, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A 2003 Gallup poll indicated that nearly 20% of Americans suspected Lyndon B. Johnson of being involved in the assassination of President Kennedy. Critics of the Warren Commission have accused Johnson of plotting the assassination because he disliked the Kennedys and feared that he would be dropped from the Democratic ticket for the 1964 re-election. According to journalist Max Holland, the first published allegation that Johnson perpetuated the assassination of Kennedy appeared in Penn Jones Jr.'s book, Forgive My Grief, which was self-published in May of 1966. In the book, Jones provided excerpts from a letter purported to have been authored by Jack Ruby, charging LBJ with the murder of the president. With his 1968 book, The Dark Side of Lyndon Baines Johnson, Joaquim Joestein is credited by Bilgosi as being the first conspiracy author to accuse Johnson of having a role in the assassination. According to Joestein, Johnson played the leading part in a conspiracy that involved the Dallas oligarchy and local branches of the CIA, the FBI, and the Secret Service.
Huh. I mean, that's really interesting. Like, for example, like JFK, like actively and like publicly and like embarrassingly, like spanked the CIA in front of the world. And then Lyndon B. Johnson goes to them and is like, hey, guys, I know that my boss is a dick to you guys. I feel really bad for you. Like, you guys should be homies with me.
Mm-hmm. He was like, oh, if only someone else was the boss,
you know, like,
you know, if only there was a way to make that happen. If only you guys were really, really good at getting rid of the bosses and places. Oof.
And if only you guys were good at not writing stuff down, you know?
Yeah.
That would be sick for me.
The fact that JFK was seriously considering dropping Johnson from the ticket in favor of North Carolina Governor Terry Sanford should Kennedy run in 1964, has been cited as a possible motive for Johnson's complicity in the assassination. In 1968, Kennedy's personal secretary, Evelyn Lincoln, wrote in her book, Kennedy and Johnson, that President Kennedy had told her that Lyndon B. Johnson would be replaced as Vice President of the United States. This conversation took place on November 19th, 1963, just 3 days before the assassination of Kennedy, and it was recorded that evening in her diary and reads as follows. As Mr. Kennedy sat in the rocker in my office, his head resting on its back, he placed his left leg across his right knee. He rocked slightly as he talked. In a slow, pensive voice, he said to me, quote,
"You know, if I am reelected in 64, I am going to spend more and more time toward making government service an honorable career. I would like to tailor the executive and legislative branches of government so that they can keep up with the tremendous strides and progress being made in other fields. I am going to advocate changing some of the outmoded rules and regulations in the Congress, such as the seniority rule. To do this, I will need, as a running mate in 64, a man who believes as I do." Which allegedly would have been this
Terry Sanford.
Terry Sanford from North Carolina, right?
Yes. Miss Lincoln went on to write, "I was fascinated by this conversation and wrote it down verbatim in my diary. Now I asked, who is your choice as running mate? He looked straight ahead and without hesitating, he replied, quote,
at this time, I am thinking about Governor Terry Sanford of North Carolina, but it will not be Lyndon.
But it will not be Lyndon.
Okay. So I do feel like I have a question about that, though. And you probably don't know the answer, but like, this is in her book, right?
Yes.
So like, I don't know, man.
This is quoted from her diary that she wrote that night.
And is that fucking, I guess that would have been before the assassination, right? That he would have said
3 days
to
before.
Her.
Yeah.
Is that corroborated? Like, do we know that she wrote it that night?
I mean, it's in her diary as corroborated as we could. I don't know if they've like carbon dated the fucking ink or anything.
I'm not saying like carbon dated, but like you can kind of get the context from like, does she have a diary every single day before that and the 2 days after? You know what I mean?
As far as I know.
That's really interesting.
In 2003, researcher Barr McClellan published in the book Blood, Money, and Power. McClellan claims that Johnson, motivated by the fear of being dropped from the Kennedy ticket in 1964 and the need to cover up various scandals, he had mistresses that were coming out in the news and things at the time, he masterminded Kennedy's assassination with the help of his friend, attorney Edward A. Clark. The book suggests that a smuggled partial fingerprint from the sniper's nest likely belonged to Johnson's associate, Malcolm Mac Wallace, and that Mac Wallace was therefore on the sixth floor of the depository at the time of the shooting. The book further claims that the killing of Kennedy was paid for by oil magnates, including Clint Murchison and H.L. Hunt. McClellan states that the assassination of Kennedy allowed oil depletion... McClellan states that the assassination of Kennedy allowed the oil depletion allowance to be kept at 27.5%, the amount of oil that they were allowed to take out at any given time, right? The ground. It remained unchanged during the Johnson presidency. According to McClellan, this resulted in saving over $100 million to the American oil industry.
Which is a fuck ton of money back then.
Oh, yeah. McClellan's book subsequently became the subject of an episode of Nigel Turner's ongoing documentary TV series, The Men Who Killed Kennedy. The episode, The Guilty Men, drew angry condemnation from the Johnson family, Johnson's former aides, and former presidents Gerald Ford and Jimmy Carter following its airing on the History Channel. And to their credit, the History Channel assembled a committee of historians who concluded that the accusations in the documentary were without merit. And the History Channel apologized to the Johnson family and agreed not to air the series in the future. So, questionable ground that this is standing on. But that's true of most of the things we've talked about in this series.
Right. Especially Badge Man.
Madeleine Brown, who alleged that she was the mistress of Lyndon B. Johnson, also implicated him in a conspiracy to kill Kennedy. In 1997, Brown said that Johnson, along with H.L. Hunt, had begun planning the Kennedys' demise as early as 1960. Brown claimed that by its fruition in 1963, the conspiracy involved dozens of persons, including the leadership of the FBI and the Mafia, as well as prominent politicians and journalists. In the documentary, The Men Who Killed Kennedy, Madeleine Brown and Mae Newman, who was an employee of Texas oilman Clint Murchison, both placed FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover at a social gathering at Murchison's mansion the night before the assassination. Also in attendance, according to Brown, were John McCloy, Richard Nixon, George Brown, R. L. Thornton, and H. L. Hunt. Madeleine Brown claimed that Johnson arrived at the gathering late in the evening and, in a grating whisper, told her that the Kennedys will never embarrass me again. That's no threat. That's a promise.
What? No fucking way.
In addition, Brown said that on New Year's Eve of 1963, she met Johnson at the Driscoll Hotel in Austin, Texas, and that he confirmed the conspiracy to kill Kennedy, insisting that the fat cats of Texas and the United States intelligence had been responsible. Brown reiterated her allegations against Johnson in the 2006 documentary Evidence of Revision. In the same documentary, several other Johnson associates also voiced their suspicions of Johnson.
What? Wow. Damn.
Dr. Charles Crenshaw, authored the 1992 book JFK, Conspiracy of Silence, along with conspiracy theorists Jens Hansen and J. Gary Shaw. Crenshaw was a third-year surgical resident on the trauma team at Parkland Hospital that attended President Kennedy. He also treated Oswald after he was shot by Jack Ruby. While attending to Oswald, Crenshaw said that he answered a phone call from Lyndon Johnson. Crenshaw said that Lyndon Johnson inquired about Oswald's status and that Johnson demanded a deathbed confession from the accused assassin, Oswald. Crenshaw said that he relayed Johnson's message to Dr. Shires, but that Oswald was in no condition to give any statement. Critics of Crenshaw's allegations state that Johnson was in his limousine at the moment of the call, and that no one in his car corroborated that the call was made, and that no record of such a call being routed through the White House switchboard existed. Of course it didn't.
Of course it fucking didn't.
And of course no one in the fucking limousine corroborated that call.
Why would they? They would be fucking yeeted. You know what I mean? Okay, this is crazy. This is wild. This is actually, not to give the game away too much, this is making a lot of sense.
Mm-hmm.
This is weird. This is happening in part 9 to me, you know?
Former CIA agent and Watergate figure E. Howard Hunt accused Johnson, along with several CIA agents who he named, of complicity in the assassination in his posthumously released autobiography, American Spy, My Secret History in the CIA, Watergate, and Beyond. Referencing that section of the book, Tim Weiner of the New York Times called into question the sincerity of the charges, and William F. Buckley Jr., who wrote the foreword, said that the material was clearly ghostwritten. Shortly afterwards, an audio-taped deathbed confession in which Hunt claimed firsthand knowledge of a conspiracy as a co-conspirator was released by his sons. The authenticity of the confession was also met with some skepticism.
So, like, what? Like, he added it into his book just to, like, churn up something, or, like, it was ghostwritten by an editor to, like, fucking make it a little bit more spicy or something?
That's what I don't understand, is that why?
Yeah, why?
It was released posthumously. He was already dead. He wasn't making any extra profit from this.
Right.
He didn't care about selling books.
Nope.
So why? In 1984...
Hey, hold on. I'm still absorbing something here really quick. Hold on.
Yes.
So, Howard Hunt accused Johnson. His biography was released. These guys are shitting on him.
He's just one more guy that was accusing Johnson.
But there's an audio taped deathbed confession of Mr. Hunt.
Yes.
In which he claims firsthand knowledge of a conspiracy because he was a co-conspirator?
Correct.
So, what? He's like, I was involved in the plot to kill JFK.
And I, as a CIA agent, I was involved in the plot to kill JFK.
And
specifically,
I
suspect, as a CIA agent.
And I suspect Lyndon B. Johnson to be a part of this. That is the craziest fucking thing I've probably heard in this entire series. That's crazy.
Yes.
Okay, I'm so sorry of my delayed fucking response. My dumb ass can't comprehend all the fucking things that are happening to me right now.
I know, I'm throwing a lot at you. I'm sorry.
This is the wildest shit ever, dude. This Lyndon B. Johnson section you're taking me through. What is happening to me right now?
Well, in 1984, convicted swindler Billy Sol Estes made a statement to the grand jury in Texas indicating that he had inside knowledge that implicated Johnson in the death of Kennedy and others. Historian Michael L. Kurtz wrote that there was no evidence suggesting Johnson ordered the assassination of Kennedy. According to Kurtz, Johnson believed Fidel Castro was responsible for the assassination and that Johnson covered up the truth because he feared the possibility that retaliatory measures against Cuba might escalate to nuclear war with the Soviet Union.
I'm going to kind of give him that one a little bit.
Maybe
because of the nuclear shit, you know, and there was the Cuban Missile Crisis not that long ago and all that shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, in 20...
But then why would they want to kill Kennedy? Because he's the savior of nuclear war, right? So then why would they want to kill him? No, fuck that. No way. Cuba didn't kill fucking JFK.
No. Cuba liked JFK.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Remember, Castro literally said he cried when he heard that JFK was assassinated. Like, no, come on. Get the fuck out of here. In 2012, biographer Robert Caro published his fourth volume on Johnson's career, The Passage of Power, which chronicles Johnson's communications and actions as vice president and describes the events leading up to the assassination. Caro wrote that nothing he had found in his research points to the involvement by Johnson. Political consultant and convicted felon Roger Stone believes that Johnson orchestrated Kennedy's assassination. He also claims that Rafael Cruz, father of Texas senator and Republican candidate for the 2016 presidential election, Ted Cruz, is tied to Lee Harvey Oswald. In 1977, the FBI released 40,000 files pertaining to the assassination of JFK, including an April 3rd, 1967 memorandum from Deputy Director Cartha DeLoke to Assistant Director Clyde Tolson that was written less than a month after President Johnson learned from J. Edgar Hoover about CIA plots to kill Fidel Castro. According to DeLoke, LBJ aide Marvin Watson stated, quote,
that the president had told him in an off moment that he was now convinced there was a plot in connection with the assassination of President Kennedy. Watson stated the president felt that the CIA had something to do with this plot.
That's Lyndon B. Johnson. Yeah.
So Lyndon Johnson told him that there was that he believes that there's a conspiracy and that the CIA had something to do with it.
Correct. When questioned in 1975 during the Church Committee hearings, DeLoc told Senator Richard Schweiker that he felt Watson's statement was sheer speculation. His speculation was that the statement was speculation.
That's not how that works. Because he said it.
It
he
does said for that the that Church Committee.
Well, of course it does for them, right?
Gayton Fonzie was hired as a researcher in 1975 by the Church Committee and by the HSCA in 1977. At the HSCA, Fonzie focused on the anti-Castro Cuban exile groups and the links that these groups had with the CIA and the mafia. Fonzie obtained testimony from Cuban exile Antonio Vencia that Vencia had once witnessed a CIA contact who Fonzie would later come to believe was David Atlee Phillips conferring with Lee Harvey Oswald. Through his research, Fonzie became convinced that Phillips had played a key role in the assassination of President Kennedy. Fonzie also concluded that, as part of the assassination plot, Phillips had actively worked to embellish Oswald's image as a communist sympathizer. He further concluded that the presence of a possible Oswald impersonator in Mexico City during the period that Oswald himself was supposedly in Mexico City may have been orchestrated by Phillips. The evidence that surfaced in the testimony given to the HSCA in 1978 and through investigative work of independent journalist Anthony Summers in 1979. Summers spoke with a man named Oscar Contreras, a law student at the National University in Mexico City, who said that someone calling himself Lee Harvey Oswald struck up a conversation with him inside the university cafeteria in the fall of 1963. And the Warren Commission did conclude that Oswald had taken a bus trip from Houston to Mexico City and back sometime in September or October of 1963. Contreras described Oswald as over 30, light-haired, and fairly short. A description that does not fit the real Oswald. And so to Fonzie, it seemed improbable that the real Oswald would randomly start a conversation regarding his difficulties obtaining a Cuban visa with Contreras, a man who belonged to a pro-Castro student group and had contacts at the Cuban embassy in Mexico City. How would he have known that? Why would he have done that?
Yeah.
Fonzie theorized that there was an Oswald impersonator in Mexico City directed by Phillips, during the period of time that the Warren Commission concluded that Oswald himself had visited the city. Fonzie's belief was strengthened by statements from other witnesses. On September 27th of 1963, and again a week later, a man identifying himself as Oswald visited the Cuban embassy in Mexico City. We talked about this, right?
Uh-huh.
Consular Izuebo Azcure told Anthony Summers that the real Oswald in no way resembled the Oswald to whom he had spoken at length. Embassy employee Sylvia Duran also told Summers that the real Oswald she eventually saw on film is not like the man she saw in Mexico City. On October 1st, the CIA recorded two taped telephone calls to the Soviet embassy by a man identified as Oswald. The CIA transcriber noted that Oswald spoke in broken Russian. But the real Oswald we know was quite fluent in Russian.
Right. It really does kind of sound like that there was either Lee Harvey Oswald was in Mexico at the same time as this impersonator, or that there was just the impersonator there, which is kind of crazy. I can't
decide which one it is, but
I kind of feel like they were both there at the same time.
Lee Oswald, you know?
Well, I think that it's interesting that the lady at the U.S. embassy was like, oh yeah, that dude that he said that he met who was named Lee Oswald is nothing like the Lee Oswald that I met. So that kind of leans me toward they were both there.
Well, no, she was saying the Lee Oswald she saw in video was not the Oswald that she met.
I see. So she didn't interact with anyone named Lee Oswald or who was calling themselves Lee Oswald or whatever.
No, she did. And she was saying that the Lee Oswald that she saw in videos, like, you know, when he got shot and stuff, were not the Lee Oswald that she met.
That she met. Okay. Yes. So maybe it was just the one guy just pretending to be Lee Oswald. Which, again, there's some strange behavior going on here where he's like, hi, my name is Lee Oswald. It fucking sucks that I can't get a Cuba fucking visa.
Yeah, who does that? That's That's fucking Men in Black ass behavior. You know what I mean? Dude. Like,
let me see that pen. I want to click it a bunch of times and giggle and run away.
A little sussy, dude.
I don't like it. Again, it's just kind of blowing my mind how much sense all of this is making.
Yeah, I hope I'm setting up these last dominoes in the right way. We'll see.
I think so.
Embassy employee Sylvia Duran also told Summers that the real Oswald she eventually saw on film is not like the man she saw in Mexico City. On October 1st, the CIA recorded two taped telephone calls to the Soviet embassy by a man identified as Oswald. The CIA transcriber noted that Oswald spoke in broken Russian. However, we know from episode 2 that the real Oswald was quite fluent in Russian. He had lived in Russia for several years at this point.
And had a Russian wife.
Exactly. On October 10th, 1963, the CIA issued a teletype to the FBI, the State Department, and the Navy regarding Oswald's visits to Mexico City. The teletype was accompanied by a man identified as Oswald who, by all reports, looked nothing like him.
So I'm definitely convinced that there's an Oswald impersonator. Also, really interesting angle here from the CIA to like tap these phone calls and be like, that's definitely not Oswald, and tell everybody that that's definitely not Oswald. But then it ends up being the official story of the JFK assassination. That's so weird.
Arden, this next page is about to blow your fucking mind.
Oh God. I swear to God, I'm not reading ahead. I'm just paying attention in class.
On November 23rd, 1963, the day after the assassination of President Kennedy, friend of the podcast, FBI Director J. Edgar Hoover's preliminary analysis of the assassination included the following quote.
Oh, God. Oh, my God.
I know it's going to blow your mind and you're reading it, so have fun.
The Central Intelligence Agency advised that on October 1st, 1963, an extremely sensitive source had reported that an individual identifying himself as Lee Oswald contacted the Soviet embassy in Mexico City inquiring as to any messages. Special agents of this bureau, who have conversed with Oswald in Dallas, Texas, have observed photographs of the individual referred to above and have listened to a recording of his voice. These special agents are of the opinion that the referred to individual was not Lee Harvey Oswald. Lee Oswald never went to fucking Mexico City, dude. He never was there.
Can we also talk about the fact that the CIA had enough people with enough knowledge on Oswald to confidently say that that person was not Oswald?
Yeah, this is the guy who's walking into CIA and FBI buildings and being like, I'm going to fucking be a communist all the fucking time, right in your guys' faces. Here's a letter about how I'm going to be fucking awful to you guys. And they throw it in the shredder. You know what I mean? And it's like,
yeah,
they all fucking know this guy.
Mm-hmm. Well, Arden, that same day, November 23rd, 1963, J. Edgar Hoover had this conversation with newly sworn in President Lyndon B. Johnson. Johnson said, quote, have you established any more about the Oswald visit to the Soviet embassy in Mexico in September? Hoover said, quote,
no. There's one angle that's very confusing for this reason. We have up here the tape and the photograph of the man at the Soviet embassy using Oswald's name. That picture and the tape do not correspond to this man's voice nor to his appearance. In other words, it appears that there was a second person who was at the Soviet embassy.
I mean,
hello? Is anybody home? Who's there? Because it's not Lee fucking Oswald, dude. Hello?
Oh my God.
No caller ID? What's going on? Who is this guy? What? Part 9, dude. Oh my God.
Well, Gayton Fonzie concluded that it was unlikely that the CIA would legitimately not be able to produce a single photograph of the real Oswald as part of the documentation of his trip to Mexico City, given that Oswald had made 5, not 1, not 2, not 3, not 4, 5 separate visits to the Soviet and Cuban embassies, according to their own source, the fucking Warren Commission, and the CIA. It is documented. We know they maintained surveillance cameras at both of these embassies.
That's what I'm saying, dude.
Not a single goddamn picture of Oswald.
It's so fucking weird that this is part of their story. They're like, Oswald went to Mexico City, and they have nothing. And it was a weird-ass looking guy who talked and walked and acted nothing like Lee Oswald. What do you guys have to say for yourselves? Like, honestly, like, what's going on here? Has anybody asked them this question directly? Have they answered it? Like, what do you mean?
A couple people have, yeah.
Dude, it's like the umbrella man showing up with the umbrella and everyone's like, that's definitely the umbrella. It's like, no, the fuck it's not.
No, the fuck it's not.
Oh, God.
It's not.
I'm losing my mind over here, dude. I can't believe you can't. You have successfully melted my brain for 9 episodes in a row. Like, what a fucking Herculean effort you have put into this. Oh my God.
Well, Arden, we have covered a lot in the last 9 episodes. And I think anyone who is listening to this that knows a decent amount about the JFK assassination is screaming at me that there is one thing that we have not talked about yet.
Oh yeah?
And that is the 3 tramps.
I have never heard of this. I'm very excited.
And Arden, we're going to have some pictures.
Oh boy,
with this one. So all right, we're gonna
take a little picture break. We're gonna come back and talk about the pictures here in just a second, depending on how we edit this, just real quick. Yeah.
So let me send you these pictures first. Let's talk about it. So this is the three tramps. And so these three men were under police escort near the Texas School Book Depository immediately after the assassination. Now I'm going to send you, actually, you know what? I'm just going to send you the Wikipedia article here. So if you pull that up under the later allegations here, we've got some photo comparisons between these three tramps and some CIA / FBI / three letter agency agents.
Okay.
Keep in mind that the photo on the left is the person, the photo on the right is the tramp, and these photos on the left are several years after the photo on the right. So go ahead and keep those pictures up while we talk about these next few paragraphs here. The three tramps are three men photographed by several Dallas area newspapers under police escort near the Texas School Book Depository immediately after the assassination of President Kennedy. The men were detained and questioned briefly by Dallas police, and they have been subject of various conspiracy theories, including some that allege the three men to be known CIA agents. So let's talk about it. E. Howard Hunt, who we have referenced before in this series, is alleged by some to be the oldest of the tramps. Hunt was a CIA station chief in Mexico City and was involved in the Bay of Pigs invasion. Hunt later worked as one of President Richard Nixon's White House plumbers. Others believe that the oldest tramp is Chauncey Holt, and Holt claimed to have been a double agent for the CIA and the mafia, and claimed that his assignment in Dallas was to provide fake secret service credentials to people in the vicinity. Witness reports state that there were one or more unidentified men in the area claiming to be Secret Service agents. And both Dallas police officer Joe Smith and Army veteran Gordon Arnold have claimed to have met a man on or near the grassy knoll who showed them credentials identifying him as a Secret Service agent.
So these guys are fucking walking around pretending to be Secret Service agents, essentially.
That was their cover. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Also, like, what a fucking downfall from my man Hunt. Like, when your resume goes from part of Bay of Pigs to plumber.
Yeah.
Like, hey, like, don't get me wrong. Plumbers, I fucking love you guys. You guys are awesome. But like, damn.
Oh, not an actual plumber.
What?
The White House plumbers, sometimes simply called the plumbers, were a secret White House group led by G. Gordon Liddy, and they were established July 24th, 1971, during the presidency of Richard Nixon. Their task was to find out who was giving out classified information, such as the Pentagon Papers. They were plumbers because they were fixing leaks.
I see. So he made a lateral movement instead of a demotion. Wow.
Oh, we might need to talk about this. Oh, yeah, we might need to talk about this. Oh, boy. Well,
like right now?
No.
JFK part 12?
No, Nixon part 1.
Yeah, for real. Oh, shit. Oh,
of
no.
80.
Hold on. Of 80, for real. Don't worry, folks. We're not doing it.
Frank Sturgis is thought by some to be the taller tramp. Like E. Howard Hunt, Sturgis was involved in both the Bay of Pigs invasion and the Watergate burglary. In 1959, Sturgis became involved with Martia Lorenz, and Lorenz would later claim that Sturgis told her that he had participated in a JFK assassination plot.
Wow.
In response to her allegations, Sturgis denied being involved in a conspiracy to kill Kennedy. In an interview with Steve Dunleavy of the New York Post, Sturgis said that he believed communist agents had pressured Lorenz into making accusations against him.
Yeah, okay, pal. All right, buddy. Whatever. Yeah, it was the commies. Yeah, it was the communists who told her to say that. Because communists were a real threat. You know, they were shooting the president and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, this is what I was saying a couple episodes ago. It's like, there weren't that many fucking communists, especially in the United States, who were like doing this shit. You know what I mean? I find that very hard to believe. There weren't that many communists in the United States to begin with.
And none of the ones that were doing that stuff, none of them say that Oswald was involved in their circles at all.
And maybe this is an appropriate point to say this here, but like, once again, speaking to how powerful the CIA is, if there were actual communists actually going rogue and actually trying to kill the president, we wouldn't know about it. You know what I mean? It's one of those types of things where they would have been like, you're done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's why I don't believe that Oswald is actually a communist. Like, fuck that. Mm-hmm. God damn it.
The HSCA had forensic anthropologists study the photographic evidence. The committee claimed that its analysis ruled out E. Howard Hunt, Frank Sturgis, Dan Carswell, Fred Lee Chapman, and other CIA suspects.
Okay. That's nice. That's nice for them.
I love that we've hit that point with the HSCA.
Cool. All right, Stig, you said that. You did say it. This holds no weight. I'm sorry.
The Rockefeller Commission concluded that neither Hunt nor Frank Sturgis were in Dallas on the day of the assassination, and records released by the Dallas Police Department in 1989 identified the three men as Gus Abrams, Harold Doyle, and John Gurdney.
They're like, you know what? We actually identified them, and they're completely different people who have nothing to do with the CIA or the JFK assassination or the Bay of Pigs.
We waited 26 years to say this.
Dude, what the fuck? Dude, they're so bad at this. I'm actually discovering that at least at this point in history, they were so bad at covering their ass. They're dog shit. But they did it, I guess.
And it was easy because people didn't have fucking Google at the time. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. You can't just access, you know, the 1968 book that came out. You know what I mean? You have to fucking go to the store and hear about it or see it and then buy that shit, you know?
Mm-hmm. In 1975, Hunt testified before the United States President's Commission on CIA Activities within the United States, which is its own episode in the future for sure.
Oh, my God.
And he testified that he was in Washington, D.C. on the day of the assassination. The testimony was confirmed by Hunt's family and an employee of the Hunts. So, I mean, come on.
Come on. They all said his entire family and one of his subordinates corroborated what he said, dude.
People who benefit from him not being in prison.
For real. Like, what the fuck? What a paragraph, dude. What a two-sentence paragraph. I love it.
In 1976, a magazine called The Spotlight ran an article accusing Hunt of being in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963, and of having a role in the assassination. But Hunt won a libel judgment against the magazine in 1981, but the verdict was overturned on appeal. The magazine was found not liable when the case was retired in 1985. In August of 2003, while in failing health, Hunt allegedly confessed to his son of his knowledge of a conspiracy in the JFK assassination. However, Hunt's health improved and he went on to live for another 4 years. Shortly before Hunt's death in 2007, he authorized an autobiography which implicated Lyndon B. Johnson in the assassination, suggesting that Johnson had orchestrated the killing with the help of CIA agents who had been angered by President Kennedy's actions as president.
Damn, so he like fuck he's right at the end, he's like, it wasn't fucking me, it was the vice president.
This is that confession that we were talking about earlier in the episode.
Oh yeah, we did it. Wait, that's still
the same guy. Yeah, this is the same guy.
The same guy.
That guy is one of the three tramps.
Yes. He worked for the CIA. He was one of the... Dude, this is fucking game over, dude. I mean, what do you mean a back-assward stance? You know what I mean? Like, what do you mean? It's the fucking CIA. Oh, my God. What do you mean? I'm so sorry. My commentary has been dog shit because my brain is melted.
It's so good. This is exactly what I needed and wanted.
I can't fucking believe the things that I'm hearing come out of this fucking outline, dude. This is wild. It's crazy.
Okay, let's wrap this up. Holy shit. Okay, it's time.
Fucking wrap it up. We're wrapping up the conspiracy. Fucking roll it into a rug and throw it in the fucking dumpster.
Tie some bricks to its feet. Throw it in the fucking bay of pigs.
For real. All
right. In 1964, the Warren Commission concluded that Oswald assassinated President John Fitzgerald Kennedy, and that Oswald acted alone, and that there is no evidence that Oswald was involved in any conspiracy directed to the assassination of the president. The commission came to this conclusion after examining Oswald's Marxist and pro-communist background, including his defection to Russia, the New Orleans branch of the Fair Play for Cuba committee he had organized, and the various public and private statements made by him espousing Marxism. Some conspiracy theorists, this one right here, have argued that Oswald's pro-communist behavior may have been a carefully planned ruse, a part of an effort by U.S. intelligence agencies to infiltrate left-wing organizations in the United States and to conduct counterintelligence operations. Others have speculated that Oswald was an agent or informant of the United States government and was manipulated by his U.S. intelligence handlers to incriminate himself while being set up as a scapegoat. Oswald himself claimed to be innocent, denying all charges and declaring to reporters that he was just a patsy. He also insisted that photos of him with a rifle had been faked, an assertion that was contradicted by statements made by his wife, Marina, who claimed to have taken the photos, and the analysis of experts of the FBI. Some researchers have suggested that Oswald was an active agent of the CIA, pointing to the fact that Oswald attempted to defect to Russia, but was then able to return without difficulty. Oswald's mother, Marguerite, often insisted that her son was recruited by an agency of the United States government and sent to Russia. Senator Richard Schweiker, a member of the U.S. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, remarked that everywhere you look with Oswald, there is fingerprints of intelligence. Schweiker also told author David Talbot that Oswald was the product of a fake defector program run by the CIA. Richard Spaeg, interim staff director and chief counsel to the HSCA, stated that if he had to do it over again, he probably would have investigated the Kennedy assassination by probing Oswald's ties to the CIA. In 1978, James Wilcott, a former CIA finance officer, testified before the HSCA that shortly after the assassination of President Kennedy, he was advised by fellow employees at a CIA post abroad that Oswald was a CIA agent who had received financial disbursements under an assigned cryptonym. Later that year, Wilcott and his wife, Elsie, who was also a employee of the CIA, repeated these claims in an article in the San Francisco Chronicle. The HSCA investigated Wilcott's claims, including interviews with the chief and deputy chief of the station, as well as officers in finance, registry, and the Soviet branch and counterintelligence, and concluded in their 1979 report that they were not worthy of belief. Of course they did.
Right. Like, again, the same shit.
And again, we've mentioned this one before. Despite its official policy of neither confirming nor denying the status of agents, both the CIA itself and many officers working in the region at the time, including David Atlee Phillips, have unofficially dismissed the plausibility of any CIA ties to Oswald.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Blakey, staff director and chief counsel for the HSCA, supported that assessment in his conclusions as well. The HSCA found no evidence of any relationship between Oswald and the CIA. But in the opinion of this conspiracy theorist, after 10 weeks of research, it seems, I said pretty clear in the outline, but I'm going to redact that and say somewhat clear. Number one, you cannot believe a word from either the Warren Commission or the HSCA as they were investigating and sourcing all of their information from the FBI and the CIA, the government organizations that they were investigating at the time. Number two, Oswald's Marxist communist sympathies were either wholly fabricated or vastly overstated by both the CIA and the FBI. Number three, Oswald, while likely in the Texas School Book Depository and probably even with a gun, did not fire the fatal shot at John Kennedy. Number four, the FBI and CIA have gone to great lengths to distance themselves from Lee Oswald. And five, there are still tens of thousands of documents and hundreds of thousands of redactions in released documents that would implicate the CIA in their involvement with the assassination of JFK. At this point in my research, it's hard to say exactly what happened on November 22nd, 1963. But I think it is very, very clear that the story that we have been fed for the last 60 years simply is not the whole truth, or really even part of it. And that, my little lone gunman, is part nine of JFK.
Oh, God. We all acted alone.
I have one more part of this story to tell next week, but we are officially done with talking about the events of November
22nd, 1963. Kyle!
And I can't confidently say that there's nothing else to be said on the subject. I kind of wanted to be able to say that at the end of this series, but that's ridiculous. We cannot cover all of this in 9 parts or 10 parts or 20 parts, right? We've joked in this series several times about becoming a JFK podcast.
Right.
And we would really have to do that if we wanted to cover everything about this case. Right. And I don't want to do that. I want to talk about aliens again. I really want to talk about aliens again. Oh, yeah. Man.
And we're going to talk about aliens soon.
And so we had to draw a line in the sand somewhere. Of course, for every single fucking thing that Arden and I are going to talk about in our back-assward stance, someone could point to a piece of evidence that disproves it. And I think that's really by design, you know, to put my tinfoil hat on here. There is so much information about JFK's assassination, and it all contradicts each other, but it all has official sources. And so at some point, some of this has to be by design, right? Some of this has to be on purpose. There is blatant disinformation that has been put out about the JFK assassination. Mountains of it. And over the last 10 weeks, I hope we've... 9 weeks. I hope we have sifted through some of it. But at the end of the day, with this case, it really is up to you, and you kind of have to decide what you believe, decide who you believe, and kind of force the puzzle pieces together a little bit, unfortunately. Because no explanation of this paints a full picture, and no explanation of this uses every puzzle piece that came in the box, you know? And again, I think that's partially by design, because we'll get to it in our back-assward stance, I guess. But I think we've made it pretty clear that Arden and I both think, maybe not to speak for Arden, I think the CIA killed JFK.
Yeah.
And
you can speak for me on that.
And it is, as a citizen of the United States, it is terrifying to think that the CIA can just kill the president and get away with it, even if it's just for 60 years, right?
Yeah.
Because that means it's all fake. Voting doesn't matter. Because if we vote in someone that the CIA doesn't like, they can just get rid of him or her. They can get rid of them, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. And that's the crux. That's why the CIA has lied so hard about this, because they have to stay the good guy.
Yeah.
even though it is so fucking obvious if you read anything about what the CIA has done ever in its history, that they just aren't, you know?
Well, and even just the stuff that we've talked about on this podcast, I mean, like MKUltra is quite genuinely one of the most horrifying things that's ever happened in this country.
Yeah.
And so you pair that with these very, you know, although not officially verified by the people who would lose their shit if they verified this, but even though it's not verified, like, you connect MKUltra to the JFK assassination and the CIA ties to the JFK assassination, and if you think any part of MKUltra is true, which it is, then you know how capable and terrifying the CIA is. And you also know that they were literally doing MKUltra when John F. Kennedy was assassinated. They were
in the middle of it.
Peak of their fucking game, to put it morbidly. You know what I mean? And so it is very hard for me to believe, going along with what you were saying, Kyle, that the CIA had nothing to do with this, had no knowledge of this. Because even what I said earlier in the episode, if an actual fucking communist was going to assassinate the president, we wouldn't fucking know about it. You know what I mean?
Honestly, though.
And like, so, like, it makes no sense that Lee Oswald, this outspoken communist who handed out 1,000 flyers and nobody showed up to his Cuba fucking meetings. Like, no. No! Bullshit! Come on!
So, of course, we've been holding off on our back-ass word stance for a while now. And I think we mentioned last week that we're going to put out our back-ass word stance for this kind of as its own episode for a deep dive. But Arden...
Kyle,
what is your back-ass word stance? The assassination of John Fitzgerald Kennedy. How did it go down?
I mean, I think you summed up the who pretty well in the last part of this episode, episode 9. You can't really believe the Warren Commission. Don't believe the HSCA. The FBI and the CIA are fucking lying, obviously. The Secret Service didn't fucking do anything. And they were probably in on it too, because like Kyle said in part 8, what the fuck were they doing? Like, when the president got shot, you know what I mean? And we could talk more about it in the backassard stance, but CIA killed JFK. Like, in my mind, it's like 1,000,000%. That's my backassard stance. Let's stay on that for a second. Say what you were
going to
say.
The real question I want to answer right now is, at the end of this, I know you don't think that Oswald fired the fatal shot. Do you think that Oswald was in the Texas School Book Depository with a gun shooting at the president? Do you think he was one of the gunmen?
You know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because I think you said something in this episode about another person being in the Texas School Book Depository. Because there's that smudged fingerprint that's in the sniper's nest.
Mm-hmm.
And that dude could have been shooting at JFK. I also think that might be why there's a third shell casing. Interesting, you know, in the Texas School Book Depository. Because, I mean, a gun was definitely fired from there.
Yeah.
I also think that you have to take, I have to go back to this moment because it lives in my mind rent free. Lee Oswald shot J.D. Tippit, like, point blank in the street, shot him 4 times. You know what I mean?
Yeah, people try to dispute it, but he shot J.D. Tippit. That did happen.
Yeah, there's no doubt in my mind that he killed J.D. Tippit. And so it's not like I don't think that Lee Oswald, who used to be in the military and who shot J.D. Tippit, wasn't fucking shooting a rifle up there at the Texas School Book Depository. I do think it, so then I guess to give you a better answer, I do think that he was up there shooting bullets. I think he shot 2 bullets, to be exact.
You're right.
And the third shell casing is something that we can talk about, but Yes, yeah. I do think that he was up there, and I do think that he was trying to kill JFK. I think that he was told to go up there and shoot JFK.
Yeah, I think you're right.
I think that there were other people shooting at JFK as well.
I also think you are right.
I think there was at least one, if not two more
Agreed.
Shooters.
I think three gunmen makes sense, and I hate it.
Makes a lot of sense, yeah. Two also kind of makes sense.
But
two
I feel like
a
with
little
two,
harder than
you,
three.
I feel like with two, you almost have to buy into the magic bullet theory.
With two?
Yeah.
Really?
One comes from Oswald, hits him in the neck from the back.
Mm-hmm.
One, and that would have to be the magic bullet that then goes into the governor. And then, because there was the shot that missed. So one shot misses, one shot hits him in the neck. And then third shot comes from the front and hits him in the head. So where does Governor Connolly get shot with two guns?
I think that there's five shots. If we're gonna talk about this right
five
now,
shots
I think
two. No, I mean we can get into it later. Let's get it. Let's say.
Yeah.
We gotta give him a reason to listen to the episode. Right?
Yeah. But yeah, at least two, if not three, gunmen for me.
Fair. I'm leaning towards three. Let's say. So our back-assward stance, I think we're unified on this one. Oswald did not act alone.
Nah.
He did not fire the fatal shot at John Fitzgerald Kennedy.
Nope.
And there was at least one more shooter, maybe probably from the grassy knoll.
I think at least one of them.
Yeah. Ugh. So
I think Umbrella Man had nothing to do with this. I don't think Batman had anything to do with this.
Nope.
I do not think that Babushka Lady had anything to do with this. That's all fucking bullshit. That's oversaturation. That's them trying to distract you. Like, no shot. Mm-hmm. Like, no.
Yes.
Also, not the same umbrella. Fuck that Umbrella Man.
So we're going to get into it a bit more in our back-assward stance episode. We are not going to release it as a mainline episode. This is going to be a bonus episode on the main show. Please go ahead and tune in for that one if you guys are interested in hearing a bit more about what we think about this.
We're going to talk about literally, and I mean literally because I'm going to force Kyle even if they don't want to. We are going to talk about literally fucking everything in that
episode.
And
I'm so excited to do it. I am so excited to do it.
We will get into such minutia. It might be an hour and a half long back-assward stance. I mean, how many hours has this series been? Like, you know what I mean?
Like 12 or 13, if not coming on 15 now by the
For
end.
Real.
Yeah. We're at over 250 pages of outline. So.
Goddamn.
But for now, thank you so, so, so much for listening to the podcast, everybody.
Thank you so much. And honestly, we're going to do this again in part 10, but we have to give Professor Kyle a round of applause. Like, yes, Professor Kyle. Oh my God, dude. Running an absolute fucking marathon.
It's a lot. This was so much fun. Having an outlet to do this kind of thing and an excuse to do this kind of thing and just talk at one of my best friends in the whole planet about shit that interests me and just info dump is so good for my mental health. And the fact that some of you guys think we're funny and want to listen in definitely helps.
Yes.
So thank you.
Thank you.
If you are enjoying the show, please subscribe and review. And if you think someone else will enjoy the show, please share it with them. Now's the perfect time. We're finishing up this series. They've got a week to listen to all 9 episodes before we get to our back-assward stance and episode 10 here. So they have all the time in the world to catch up.
And the thing about the Backassards podcast is that you know.
You fucking know, dude. Just like I know that the CIA killed JFK so goddamn hard. You know.
You know that the Backassards podcast is the best podcast to share with your friends and that it is your favorite fucking podcast, if I do say so myself.
Absolutely. You can listen to our previous episodes for more. I am going to go ahead. I know we're at the end of a super big series here. I am going to go ahead and plug our other super big series that we have done on this show. Our incredible, absolutely batshit perfect deep dive on Jonestown that Arden did. It's 8 episodes long. It is some of the most harrowing shit I've ever listened to. It is a lollipop series every single episode. But it is, I think, some of the best work that we have done on this entire show. So I'm going to go ahead and plug that. Give our Jonestown series a listen if you haven't yet.
I really appreciate everything you just said, Kyle. Jonestown was a really, really special series for myself and for the show and for, you know, a lot of the people who have listened to it. It's something that I hold very near and dear to my heart. I also highly recommend our Jonestown series. It is a heartbreaking story. So get yourself a lot of lollipops for that shit.
Yeah, for sure. You can follow me and Arden on Twitter. I am at backassword Kyle. Arden is at Arden_Smith. And you can follow the podcast on all of your favorite social medias on Twitter at backasswordspod, Instagram backasswordspod, TikTok backasspod, and on Facebook just search the Backasswords Podcast. If you are really, really enjoying what we're doing here, you can go ahead and support us over on Patreon at patreon.com/backasspod. If you support us at our $5 tier, you're going to get access to our bonus show that we put out every week, The Wednesday Phenomena. It is a blast over there. We've been trying some new stuff, and so far people are liking it. So go ahead and come and check us out. Have a party with us. You get to join the Discord. You get to chat with us. Get all parasocial. It's great.
The Wednesday Phenomena. It's such a fun time, folks. You should join us over there.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Arden.
And we will see you next week.
Unless, boy, will we.
Unless you piss off the CIA. You know, just don't do that like we've been doing for the last 9 weeks. So I guess hopefully we will see you next week.
God.
I'm going to double check my door locks and make sure all of my food has a proper seal on it for the next week. But
oh, for real. So that we can stay safe. And if you want the CIA to get mad at you, just record a podcast that shits on them constantly so that you can stay weird.
the danger is real, my friends.
The CIA literally exists. Lock your doors.
That's all you need to know. The danger.
Barricade everything. What zombie apocalypse, dude? They're here. They're just not zombies.
They're spooks.
We'll see you next week. God damn it. I'm not mad. I love you guys.
We'll see you next week. Now recording.
Dude, and what's crazy is that, like, I'm already afraid of aliens and the CIA. And it's like, sometimes they're scarier than I already think that they are.
I just keep learning new things.
There's so much more. There's always more.
Mm-hmm.
Why is every single alien seem to be smarter than us? Like, they've literally crashed and we could not fucking find them or help them. They're so much smarter than us, or at least are better at surviving than us.
Yeah.
If they are crazy
third dimensional beings, you know,
they're always abducting us, dude.
Mm-hmm.
We're the lower life forms.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of brilliant people. That's what's crazy.
Yep. And we're on the level of like animals to them. It's not just like, oh, they're slightly dumber than we are. It's we are on a different plane of intelligence and consciousness than they are.
Oh, I have to be afraid of the CIA now. Sorry. I can't keep on being afraid of aliens.
Yeah, give it a couple weeks.